33 minutes after 7 o'clock. So we had a little bit of excitement this morning with that earthquake. And whenever earthquakes happen, I always like to reach out to experts. And there is no better expert in Humboldt County than Lori Dengler, the professor emeritus at HSU. How are you doing this morning?
Well, I'm awake. How about you?
Oh, I'm well awake. Definitely. Yeah, that was a pretty good quake. Now, we're in Ferndale, and since it was off Ferndale's coast, and we're in kind of an area that feels just about everything because we're on the bottoms, it was pretty strong here, but I understand it wasn't too strong where you were.
No, and actually, I was awake, but I was lying in bed on the second floor of our house, in a wood frame building, which really is a good seismograph. I mean, you know, we kind of amplify the shaking a little bit, and it was modest. And my husband said, "That was an earthquake," and I said, "Yes, that was an earthquake." Now I have to get to work.
That's
and
right.
So since then, I've been trying to gather the information that I can about it, and the most important thing about the earthquake is that it posed no tsunami threat.
That was the first thing we checked right away. Is there any tsunami coming from this thing?
Yeah, and you know, it's really great that now you can actually sign up to get text messages directly from the National Tsunami Warning Center. That earthquake happened at 6:50 a.m.
Yep.
And 4 minutes later, there was a text message on my phone that said, "No tsunami expected." And we'll post info on how to get that text, sign up for that text messaging on the Redwood Coast Tsunami Work Group Facebook page.
Wonderful.
So if you go to Facebook and just look for Redwood Coast Tsunami Work Group. I posted that information a couple of weeks ago, but I will repost it today once I get a chance to catch my breath.
So, Lori, is the general rule of thumb that anything under 7 is generally not a tsunami threat?
Well, you got to be a little careful because it depends really on the kind of earthquake it is.
Right.
And it depends on how close to the coast it is. So had that earthquake, if we had a 7, like right next to the coast, there's always a possibility that the shaking can trigger a submarine slide that could produce a local tsunami threat. So this earthquake, it was very, very clear that it was what we call a strike-slip earthquake, where the fault moves horizontally like cars on a freeway.
Mm-hmm.
That type of faulting does not deform the seafloor up or down. I mean, there's a tiny bit, but it's not enough to pose something that's going to be a threat.
Okay, that was the other information I was asked. What kind of quake was this? And you're saying this was a strike slip.
This was a strike slip earthquake. And so, first thing I want to say is this was really pretty ordinary. I mean, yes, it was a good size earthquake, but when you look at our 150 plus years of pretty good records about earthquakes on the North Coast, the Mendocino Fault is one of our two primary sources of historic earthquakes, the other being offshore in the Gorda Plate. And the good thing for us is that a lot of these earthquakes are pretty far offshore, and they move from side to side, and they don't produce a significant tsunami. So all of our recent earthquakes, until you get back to 92. So you look at the earthquake a couple of years ago that was pretty far off in the Gorda Plate. Our last really significant damaging earthquake in 2010, that was a 6.5, same magnitude as today's.
Mm-hmm.
But that one was a whole lot closer to the coast.
Right.
So same kind of fault motion, but much, much closer to the coast. So as far as, our general tectonic picture here, these earthquakes they are always a surprise when you are kind of asleep and you wake up with an earthquake or you start feeling that jiggle, but they're not a surprise in terms of what is typical behavior here on the North Coast. They say nothing about the likelihood of a bigger earthquake. There's always a small chance whenever there's an earthquake, a tiny percentage that you could have, it could be followed by another earthquake as big or bigger. And there's really nothing in this earthquake that would trigger or foresee the big one, what we would call a Cascadia earthquake.
Right. That was my big question, was such a large quake.
Yeah, but with that being said, mm-hmm. I always like to say at any time, there is always a small chance that that could happen. So there's nothing in this earthquake that's really significantly loading the deck more than it's already loaded. But it's already loaded. So
right.
This should be a wake-up call, literally, figuratively, that, yes, we live in earthquake country, and this is a really good time to have the talk about earthquakes in your family, in your workplace. Review your plan. Do you have a place to meet? Cell phones aren't going to work. Telephones aren't going to work. A strong earthquake is going to cut us off from one another. And we would be glad to provide anyone with free copies of our earthquake magazine, Living on Shaky Ground, How to Survive Earthquakes and Tsunamis in Northern California, just by leaving a message on our Earthquake Center message line, which is 707-826-6019. So again, 826-6019.
I wrote it down.
Too early in the morning. And if organizations would like a box of them, we can certainly provide that to businesses and other organizations, and we'd be glad to get the word out.
Fantastic. So I know that some earthquakes, depending on where they are and the way they move, can take pressure off of other faults, and sometimes they can put more pressure on other faults. And, of course, Cascadia is the one that we all keep our eye on.
Right.
So this one, what did it do? Did it relieve? Did it add?
Well,
or do we not know?
At this point, I'm kind of waiting to see the stress analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And this part of the Cascadia subduction zone is kind of pinned. There's almost no plate convergence at the southern end of the Cascadia subduction zone.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at how the Cascadia subduction zone is our big convergent boundary, where the offshore plates, the Gorda and then further north, the Juan de Fuca plate, are converging beneath North America. But at Cape Mendocino, that convergence is zero. It's completely stopped. All of our motion really is along the Mendocino Fault at mm-hmm. that point. And as you move north, you know, by the time you're at Crescent City, the rate of movement between the two plates is a little more than how fast your fingernails grow. And by the time you get up to Central Oregon and Washington State, the motion is about twice that. So the rate at which the two plates are pushing into one another are different. It's complicated. The good news for us is that on this southern part of Cascadia subduction zone,
mm-hmm.
Because there is not as much convergence, we're probably not going to get quite as much slip when the Cascadia goes. Now, it's going to shake plenty hard.
Sure.
But our tsunami is probably not going to be as big as the tsunami they get in Oregon and Washington. And some people may have heard articles or seen stories about how high the sort of expected tsunami is in Oregon and Washington. our tsunami threat is still significant, but probably not as large in terms of how the actual maximum height here. That's the good news. I mean, and we have evidence. We've had lots of people put cores in Humboldt Bay, and the Mad River Slough in particular is a great place to collect tsunami deposits if they were there, but we've never found a single one, which means in the last 3,000 years, we have not had a tsunami large enough to make it over the dunes on the Samoa Peninsula.
Really?
So that kind of constrains the size of... So that's the good news is because our convergence isn't so great down here, our slip probably isn't so big. The bad news is we're much, much closer to that fault system, and
right.
So our ground shaking is we're probably going to get a bigger ride. And the tsunami, although not as big as Oregon and Washington, is going to arrive more quickly. So this is a really good time to get that. Put a copy of Living on Shaky Ground in everyone's stocking this Christmas and sit around the fire and read about all the really good things you can do to make you and your family safe. Because
right.
The good news is that we live in a pretty resilient community. Folks up here aren't generally going to freak out when their power goes out. Or, you know, when they're kind of isolated in their house for a while. But it really does help if you have a couple of weeks' worth of food, if you've got water, if you've got backup batteries, if you realize that you probably can get some information on your portable radio, especially if you dial KHUM.
There you go.
Or KHSU or some mm-hmm. of the other stations, a lot of our local radio stations.
As long as they're on the air.
worked really hard to make their stations resilient. And I don't know if you have time, but I can tell a story from Chile about radio stations.
Okay.
In 2010, I was part of a reconnaissance team that visited the hardest hit areas of Chile after their magnitude 8.7 earthquake. And it knocked out communications, it knocked out roads, it knocked out all the radio stations except for one, Radio BOBO, a commercial station with a number of affiliates throughout Chile. And I spoke with the director of the Concepcion station, who he was an earthquake wonk. He was an engineer by training, and he had studied earthquakes for many years. And about 5 years before that earthquake, he decided that they were going to have an earthquake sooner rather than later, and invested a lot of money into his station to harden everything, to make sure that the equipment wouldn't slide, to make sure they had a backup generator, to make sure they were in, and they even talked about their programming. They talked about, I mean, this is a commercial station, and they talked about what they would do in the event of an earthquake. They were off the air for 20 minutes, kind of dusting things off, and then for the next 4 days, they were the only station in the region broadcasting.
That was kind of like when in 2005 when that huge storm took all the power out here for like a week. You know, we were one of the few stations still on.
It radio becomes really, really important in those times because you really do want to know that there's somebody else out there.
Absolutely, it's critical.
And so we really do appreciate all the work that KHUM does.
Well, we've got backup generators here in the studio. We have them up at the transmitter sites.
Yep.
And it's like you do what you can to keep it on, because we know what a vital link it is when it all goes down. And And this is like a wake-up call. And it's always a good time for us to all look around and see, is stuff strapped down? You know, we have lots of different things that could fall over, and almost everything here is strapped down because we have had stuff fall over before. We go, okay, we've learned from this. So just about everything that can fall down is now strapped down here, because we're in Ferndale, and we get to feel a lot of quakes here. And we're on the second floor of an old redwood building, so
it shakes a lot. Well, we certainly appreciate your getting the word out.
Absolutely. So one more thing before we wrap about the Cascadia subduction zone. I don't like to freak people out, but people should be aware that, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, this is one of those things as when rather than if. We all know that it will go at some point. It's just the nature of the way these are. And there's always the probabilities on how often it happens. And this one, the probabilities of this one is approximately like every 300 years.
Well, actually, that's not
true. Told. Okay. Oh, please tell me. Please tell me.
If it were every 300 years, our issue, we would have already had it.
Yeah.
Because the last significant mm-hmm. Cascadia earthquake was in 1700. So we would be all recovered, right?
Mm-hmm.
But no, earthquakes do not occur like clockwork.
They're not like clockwork. But they're
they're not like clockwork. And when we look at the record of the past big Cascadia earthquakes, we have to use what we call paleoseismology, looking for evidence of those past earthquakes mm-hmm. in the rocks. And the most recent one in January of 1700, there are written records in Japan, so we know the exact day, and we can kind of narrow the time of day down to a couple of hours.
Wow.
But when we go back earlier than that, we have the errors associated with geologic dating.
Sure.
So we've always got a kind of an error bar, and the further back you go, generally the bigger that error bar gets. But from that 1700 quake, there's really no geologic evidence of a significant Cascadia earthquake along most of this coast until about 800 years before then. And then there looks like there's maybe three pretty good-sized Cascadia earthquakes that occur over, about a 300-year period.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you go back further, and then there's, you know, another big long gap. So on average, the recurrence is probably a little closer to 500 years.
Got it.
But they certainly can be as close as perhaps 200, 180 years, or as far apart as 1,000 years. There's some evidence that suggests we may get partial ruptures. We may get instead of them all being nines, there might be some 8.5s and 8.6s in there. But that could happen a little more frequently on this southern end of the zone. But the bottom line is a Cascadia earthquake is a credible thing. It's going to happen sometime in the next 200 to 300 years. It could happen this afternoon, and it could happen 50, 60, 70 years. So it's something that is definitely worth our community's planning for. The most important thing about a Cascadia earthquake is that we're going to survive it, but how well we survive it depends on the kind of preparedness that we take ahead of time. It's just really difficult to have. I mean, our buildings are not going to collapse.
There's been a
we
lot
might
of retrofitting
have some
going
local on. Problems, but wood frame buildings can withstand really strong shaking, and in general, they're going to be standing. Of course, the more things we do to reinforce ahead of time, the better we are.
Sure. There is reinforcement going on as we speak right now at Humboldt State University in the library.
That's right. It's hard to park the library because of the work that's being done on the library.
Though. And I understand the Van Duzer is next.
Yeah, and there are a number, I mean, back in 92, I think the North Coast Journal did a story about the unreinforced buildings of Humboldt County and came up with a list of about 40. I think that list is now down to 8 or 9. Some have been torn down, some have been retrofitted, but those are still, there are still some, you know, older brick buildings that
yep.
could use a little more strengthening.
Yeah, I know in Old Town Eureka, a lot of the unreinforced masonry has now been reinforced. They just redid
the
Carson Block building, had a huge redo.
Yes. There's a whole nother class of sort of older reinforced concrete buildings,
right.
And the Van Duzer and the library sort of fell into that category.
And that's why they're getting retrofitted.
And those are you know, it costs money to retrofit, and that's something that is really money well spent when the ground starts to shake.
Absolutely. Well, we are out of time, but I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today.
Well, I thank you for your interest, and and again, we'd be glad to provide people with copies of Living on Shaky Ground.
Fantastic. And just to recap, we had a 6.5 magnitude earthquake 160 kilometers west of Ferndale, which translates to 99.4 miles. Of a depth of, and it was a pretty shallow one, 12.1 kilometers. That's about 7 miles deep. And we felt it pretty well here in Ferndale. Not everyone felt it as strongly. And no tsunami warning coming out of this. So that is,
right.
that is the good news. That is certainly the good news. A strike slip quake, not remarkable, just kind of your average quake.
Well, average good sized.
Average good size quake. Yeah, this is a pretty good size quake. Definitely take it seriously.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Lori Dingler, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. As always, whenever the ground shakes, we talk.
All right.
Alrighty. Thank you very much.
Have a good, peaceful day.
We will do our best.